This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Over the last few days, we have heard the term impeachment as it pertains to the Section 89. And that is what the panel of three jurists were asked to look at. A former High Court judge, a former Chief Justice, and a senior advocate. They were meant to just look prima facie whether or not there is a basis to impeach the president. And if so, make the recommendation to Parliament, who then must trigger whatever processes within Parliament. That's really what the judges were asked to do. But within Parliament are other mechanisms of holding members of the executive, and in this case, the president, accountable. And we've seen it happen in previous administrations, where Parliament will vote for a vote of no confidence and then conduct that vote. And in fact, yesterday, what parliamentarians were calling for is that if they move in a particular direction, whether to trigger the impeachment or a vote of no confidence, that they should do it by secret ballot, that people shouldn't feel beholden to party ideals, but vote on their individual conscience. And I think that motion was thrown out. And then the DA, for their part, have recommended that Parliament be dissolved to trigger an early election. And that's something that usually happens in countries like the UK, when you get to this kind of constitutional problem where a cloud hangs over the head of a prime minister or a president, is call early elections and start again. And so the conversation we're having now with Alton Hart, who's an attorney and from the University of Johannesburg's Law Clinic, is to understand these different processes, the different options available to Parliament, and under what circumstances in constitutional law that they may be triggered. That's the conversation we're having, because we're using terminology, but do we understand what it is that the Speaker of Parliament is having to consider? So, Alton, good morning.
Good morning, Lerato, and good morning to the listeners.
And thank you so much for coming through. So first and foremost, let's go back to last week and the findings of that three panel investigation. Now, the word that's used is an investigation, but it's not an investigation in a criminal sense. What were they actually asked to establish when they came up and said this prima facie evidence that the president perhaps has gotten himself into a pretty precarious position?
Obviously, the panel was mandated to actually look at, and this is now when you look at the Executive Ethics Code coupled with the Constitution, but obviously the Constitution being the highest law in the country. Yeah. And they wanted to see if the officer or the president himself has breached his oath of office. And that's primarily what this panel had to look at. Is there a case to answer by the president to Parliament for his actions or inactions? Because if I'm saying inactions, I'm talking about where they say that a crime was committed on his property and he failed to actually report it. Mm-hmm. So that is what this committee had to look at. And there was already a lot of discussion about the legitimacy of the report. There's a report that was produced by the three panel jurists that they say that the report was flawed because it's based on hearsay evidence. And it's only allegations from one side, and they did not give cognizance, or they did not take cognizance of the what we call the audi alteram partem rule, which simple English means taking cognizance of both sides of the story and then interpret it and then actually give a just and equitable verdict. So that was more or less what the panel was supposed to do, and that's the basis on which the president is currently before the Constitutional Court to actually review the recommendations of this report.
I just want you to please state it for us unequivocally, even myself. This is not about the work that the Hawks or the NPA are doing. It's not an investigation as to whether a crime was committed. It's an investigation as to constitutionally, according to the Code of Conduct, Ethics and Oath of Office, is there a problem here?
Yes, we should not confuse the parliamentary process with legal processes. If we talk about the legal processes, then we would say, okay, if we want to talk about legal processes, then we would say there was an alleged, and I would use the word alleged, crime that was committed on the president's property and he failed to report it. That would be seen criminally as defeating the ends of justice. And then also there was these allegations. And once again, I want to put in strong emphasis on allegations to say that the president was directly or indirectly involved in the kidnapping and abducting these alleged robbers that broke into his house or his Palapala farm and actually stole a certain amount of cash. That also give rise to criminal charges, but that lies at the doorstep of the National Director of Public Prosecution. She will have to instruct her investigators, the Hawks, the SIU, whoever feels is comfortable and capable of doing the investigation to go actually probe this. Does the president have a case to answer in the criminal courts of South Africa? Okay. That's something totally different than the parliamentary processes. Is simply the oath of office. That's what the business of parliament. And Speaker has then the right to actually say, let's start the processes or not start the processes. But there is a two-thirds majority that you need in order to start that process.
Okay, we'll talk about Parliament. I just want to defer to your legal mind very quickly. So any allegations of criminality, the kidnapping, the use of police helicopters and interceptors, you know, advisors going to Namibia, that's what the Hawks and the NPA need to investigate. So in terms of the oath of office and what was looked at, it was looked at why he didn't report the thing to the police. And then they also looked at an element in terms of law, I can't remember it offhand, but whether or not the president could have prevented fraud and corruption in how the situation was handled. And the finding was he didn't do enough. What do they mean by those things?
Obviously, and I heard a lot of commentators trying to move to the PRECA Act, which is the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act, that they wanted to move into that piece of legislation. But that's not where you're going to find the president's omissions or actions to be lawful or unlawful. That is only when you deal with government contracts. But when we look at the president to say that, obviously, if there's an allegation made against the current president, he has a constitutional right to be presumed innocent until found guilty by a court of law. So up until that point where a court of law has not found him guilty, then you cannot technically say in terms of criminal law, he has violated the constitution or he's broken any laws. Because part of the oath of office that they want to rely on is to say that, yes, criminal charges or allegations of criminal charges against the president, but yet he's not formally charged. So we cannot put heavy emphasis or rely heavily onto that until the National Director of Public Prosecution goes and says, Mr. President, I now formally charge you with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 charges for which you have to come and answer to in a criminal court. And then the process will now unfold where he will now defend and bring his witnesses to come and rebut whatever is put against him in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. And that process will unfold. But that is separate from the parliamentary process. And I can see that these two things now has blurred the lines. And people want to actually drag politics into the courts of law and actually drag the courts of law into the politics. And we say, please keep these two things separate. If you say that he violated his oath of office and as a president, then go. We're not saying don't go, but this is the requirement that you have to meet.
Okay.
And on top of that, we now know that the Treasurer General yesterday said MPs will be told to toe the party line. So that also now you can say, why is that mandate sent out?
Okay. All right. So let's talk about this oath of office and what Parliament is being asked to consider. Is that we know now, even by his own admission, and I don't know why it slips people's memories, that the president is involved in business on the side. And what does the Constitution say about ethics, codes of conduct, declarations concerning a state president?
Obviously, the oath of office or the ethics code says that you have to declare, and also a president cannot conduct business while the president of the country. So back then when he was the deputy president back in 2014, he sort of asked the then president, who was former President Zuma, so to say, listen, you guys know that I'm involved in business. Can you give me that transition period to actually get out of business? And he started a trust. And he then actually gave the trust authority to do business on his behalf, and he was not involved in the day-to-day running, according to him. So if that is true, that he is doing business, and now on a public platform, he confirmed that he's doing business. So now it might come down to technical arguments where he say, no, I just loosely use the word I am doing business, but it's actually the trust that's doing business. I'm just the owner of the trust, and I'm not interfering, and this person is doing the running of the trust and those type of things. But on a public platform, he said already that he is doing business, and he said that he received money. He said it was not as much as the allegations made by Arthur Fraser about how many millions of dollars it was, but there was an amount of money taken away or stolen from his property. And then we know now there's the Reserve Bank regulations that says if that is the case, you have to declare. And an individual at any given time must have an amount of 25,000 rand at least. But sometimes there is exceptions where you can have unlimited amount of cash within the borders of the country coming through. But we know now there's a guy called Mr. Mustafa that said he brought the cash or the foreign currency through customs into South Africa. So it's not the president. So there's a lot of hearsay evidence floating around, and people want to act as if you can just flat out accept hearsay evidence. You cannot. You can provisionally accept hearsay evidence, but you have to meet certain requirements, and later on you need to call the primary source from which you got that hearsay evidence to confirm, I got the information from Lerato and I gave it to Elton. So that is the type of thing that you have to do.
And who has to do it?
No, obviously the person involved. And here, if the president, and I mean the president, when he receives money, it's as an income, he needs to declare to SARS, he needs to say to SARS, SARS, I got money, X amount for income, because you need to pay tax on every income generated in the country. That's how it works. Okay. And then also, if you bring foreign currency into the country, you need to notify the Reserve Bank. But I also know there is a 30-day period. Mm. Say, for instance, if I give foreign currency to you now, today, Lerato, then I have 30 days, or you have 30 days in which you have to declare it to the South African Reserve Bank to say, listen, yeah, I received cash on the 6th of December from Elton Hart in foreign currency, and it's this amount. So you have 30 days. Okay. So until the 6th of January, you can report it without running the risk of being charged for violating the Reserve Bank regulation.
All right, so let's woosa and take in everything you've said. Short break, and then you're going to tell us, on the basis of everything that you've said, what are the options available to Parliament? Is it dissolving Parliament? Is it impeachment? Is it a motion of no confidence? We're in conversation with Elton Hart.
You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7.
We're in conversation with Elton Hart, who is an attorney at the University of Johannesburg's Law Clinic, Anon Cognito, I like that. He says, I've listened to Dr. Llewellyn Kerr-Lewis on this Pala Pala matter and the subsequent review. I find his analysis broad and forward-looking, and I think your guest is speaking really well as well. So people saying thank you for just talking us through some of the grey areas, Elton Hart. So the recommendation is for Parliament to trigger Section 89, which I understand to be an impeachment process. What is Parliament saying? Even though there's a review, what can Parliament honestly do with what they know?
Obviously, if a person places a motion on the order paper of the day in Parliament, that motion is debated, and then after that motion is debated, parties will then be given opportunity to vote. Now, we know that the ATM is one of the people who's strongly behind this motion of impeaching the president. And I also know that the UDM also made it known that they're also going to support this motion. So they have to now come debate the motion. And once the motion is debated, then parties will be asked to actually now vote. And now we know, and I've mentioned it earlier already, the Treasurer General yesterday in a press briefing said they have told their MPs to vote against the adoption of this motion. So if they're going to vote against the adoption of the motion, then we know already the ANC is approximately 57% of the MPs in Parliament. Mm. And you need at least two-thirds of the MPs, which means you need like 66.6% of the MPs to vote in favor of this motion to then be adopted. And once the motion has been adopted, then Parliament can now set the wheels of motion in place so that they can actually have a committee that will do now the impeachment hearing of the president, similar to the Section 194 that's currently busy with the suspended public protector, where evidence will be led and the president will then have an opportunity to actually cross-examine and also bring his own evidence to rebut whatever allegations is placed before him.
So the numbers game, you're saying, is what we need to watch now when and if this impeachment motion comes forward, is that the opposition collectively have 43% of those seats. They would need to convince members of the ANC to vote with them. They'd need at least about 15% of ANC MPs to cross the floor.
I think it's a little bit more because they need 66.6%. So technically you want to be in 67. So if they have, the opposition is already on 43, you need that 7, and so 7 plus 70 that you need.
Yeah.
So approximately, give or take, you need like 24% of the ANC to come and vote with you. Now, we know already there was an issue of secret ballot that they wanted.
Yes.
The ATM specifically wanted it to be a secret ballot. Now Parliament has said no secret ballot, it will be an open ballot. And now the Treasurer General's a mandate of yesterday that was sent out to the MPs is like, you will toe the party line. Will mean that if you vote against the ANC as an MP, obviously there will be repercussions for you. So MPs will now also now be, most probably, they might not vote with their conscience. Maybe there is one or two that wants to vote for the motion, but because of this mandate, and they are deployed by the ANC. So you have to now toe the party line. So the numbers game now becomes out and out a important thing to watch.
Right.
And we know now already, Alirato, if you check, at the nominations for the NASRE conference, we saw that President Ramaphosa got like 2,793 votes if I'm not mistaken with my numbers. That was more or less there. So it means that 2,793 of the branches is saying to the president. So we know now by the branches, so the branches would also have said to the PEC and to the NEC and to the NWC, listen here, we're going to toe the party line, and this is what we're voting for President Ramaphosa. So that's what I see.
So what does this mean for a country that is faced with somewhat of a constitutional crisis? I don't know if that's the right terminology to use, in that it is now known, I'll be careful, it's now an assumed issue that we've got a problem with a president who might morally have violated his oath of office. So South Africans are now aware of this. And constitutionally, when this happens, that president should resign his position or be impeached. But he won't face impeachment because of a proportional representation system. What does this mean for a country that needs accountability and consequences?
Firstly, I would say then we have to change our electoral system to say, listen, you know, proportional representation does not work for our new democracy anymore. It used to work maybe in 1994 and maybe the election after that, but now suddenly it's not working anymore for us and we have to now change the electoral system. Obviously, that is why the president then is approaching the Constitutional Court, because what the president is trying to do with the Constitutional Court, or that's my view, he's going there to say, court, look at this report, and if the Constitutional Court said the report is flawed, somehow it gives back that credibility that might have been lost by the recommendations made by the panel, to say, yes, the panel, but now the court, judges have looked at it, at the Constitutional Court, they've scrutinized the report and they say, listen, yeah, you did not give the president a fair hearing when he presented his evidence. And once the court says the report is flawed, then it would now give the ANC sort of have that upper hand when they debate this motion to say, listen, yeah, yes, there was this report, but obviously the court has said this report is flawed. And we know that that application for review is on an urgent basis. It was issued late yesterday. The papers are before court. So I think the court in the next couple of days will sit maybe for a full session and listen to that application and make a finding on it. Because there's a lot of urgency because the country's presidential race depends on this. So that's where I think that's why the president approached that court. But as a country, there is some sort of a constitutional crisis, and it will speak to amending the constitution now.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you a very unfair question because I know yours is to be independent. In any other country, if anything like this happened, even just on that prima facie, in any other country, Britain, Germany, a president would have stepped down and do this thing parallel away from the business of government. Should this have happened in the South African case?
I think, and remember when the president, when he ran for president, when he came on as the preferred candidate, he said he wanted transparency and all those type of things. I would have thought that the president should have actually said, I'm taking leave of absence from the office so that all these investigations can happen. Alternatively, I would say, Mr. President, there is these allegations. Clear your name. But obviously, then it becomes now these factional battles. But under normal circumstances, so many dark clouds hanging over president in the European countries, these people will step down. But I'm not saying we should follow the European example, but I'm saying that's what's happening there. And for me, either for the best case scenario for the president would have been maybe to take a leave of absence and not really resign, because obviously he's also been mandated by the NEC of the party, which is the highest decision-making body, not to step down, but to fight. So if you are a deployee of the party, then you do what the party says. But if you as an individual, you apply your conscience and you use your conscience, because we know even if the president resigns, he will never be a poor man because he's got a lot of businesses. Yeah. So it won't affect him, but maybe he's there because of the principle. And then I would say rather take the leave of absence, let the deputy step in for a minute and act. And then we just get the investigations cleared. We get your name cleared in the courts of law. And then you come back and say, listen, yeah, I've left it. I've stood back. You guys do your jobs. I'm not interfering. And then we get the good result. And then we know people will believe that this president is really full of transparency and filled with integrity.
And walks the talk. Elton Hart, attorney at the University of Johannesburg's Law Clinic. Thank you so much for your time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.